You're listening to the Converge Podcast Network and The Conversation with Adam Weber, lead pastor of Embrace Church and author of Love Has a Name.
Everybody, this is The Conversation. My name is Adam. I am overjoyed, truly overjoyed that you are tuning in today. I am joining you from the beautiful blue-skied Sioux Falls, South Dakota. It is absolutely gorgeous here. I'm trying to deny the fact that in a month or two that cold and snow and winter are headed our way, but life is so good here, and I hope the same is true for all of you. I know I already said it, but I am so grateful for every last one of you. I'm just humbled that you would tune in. I pray that each minute would be so well worth your time here, that you would feel renewed, that you would feel challenged, that you would feel encouraged by my words, by the words of my guests, more than anything, that you'd be encouraged and challenged by God himself through this podcast somehow, some way. Before I get to today's episode, I just want to mention one thing though, and it's actually a huge favor that I'm asking of all of you. Next month, August 25th, I am releasing a brand new book called Love Has a Name. Love Has a Name. Learning to love the difficult, the different, and everyone else. I cannot believe the timing that this book releases. Never has this message been more needed by our world, by us, by the church, by Christians, by people in general. So I'm so excited about the book, but I need your help. Here's the favor part. When authors release a book, they typically build what we call is a launch team. It's a group of people who are saying, hey, I'm willing to help you spread the word about your book. That's what I'm asking of you. If you are interested, go to adamweber.com/launch. I'm asking three things of you: to pre-order a copy of the book, to do a post on release day, and also to leave a review of the book. Those are the three things I'm asking of you. As a result, in response to that, 68 people, actually 69 people will now win a whole bunch of different gifts. I'm looking at the gifts right now. Some of you will win a signed book by author Mark Batterson, by Bob Goff, by Carlos Whitaker. One of you is going to get a signed Minnesota Vikings jersey by the awesome powerhouse CJ Ham. I got signed coffee beans by the bachelor Ben Higgins. There's gift cards to two online boutiques, both that my wife absolutely loves. I'm sure she'll hope that she'll win those herself. So there's all these different kinds of prizes that I'm giving out as a simple way to say thank you. And so again, if you're interested, go to adamweber.com/launch. The more people, the merrier. Spots are limited, and there's roughly about 7 or 8 days at the time this episode releases. And so if you haven't signed up yet, go and sign up. That's the end of my favor ask. Today's episode, I sat down with Pastor Levi Lusco. And just to say it, I've never said anything poorly about him, but I've often kind of just been unsure about Levi Lusco. I'm just like, who is this guy out in Montana? And he kind of feels flashy and he's outside the box. Inwardly, I kind of critiqued him, and I just need to confess, I was so wrong. I sat down with Levi Lusco. I was blown away by his kindness. I was blown away by the Jesus inside of him. I was so convicted after the conversation. I went to my wife and I just said, I've never said anything poorly in my life about Levi, but I was so wrong, and I inwardly judged him. Just quick side note, I don't know who the person is in your life that you secretly critique. Maybe it's a coworker, maybe it's a colleague, maybe it's a stranger, maybe it's someone that's in the same field as you that's doing things better. Oftentimes we criticize people who are doing things better than we are. I'm not sure who that person is, but I just want to challenge you, be slow to judge, be slow to critique, because I was so incredibly wrong, and I just need to confess that. In our conversation, Levi shares his story. He talks about being outside the box. Honestly, the thing I respect about him most is how creative he is in sharing the gospel, how creative he is in talking about Jesus. And so I know that you will be encouraged. I know that you will be challenged. As always, sit back, relax, and enjoy this conversation.
Well, I'm sitting here with evangelist, pastor, author, father, husband,
coffee drinker.
Coffee drinker.
Although today it's a Zevia. That's what's going on today.
I actually wondered what that was when you sat down. I'm like, what is he drinking right now?
Are you a Zevia drinker?
I'm not a Zevia drinker.
I sort of hijack your introduction, but Zevia has stevia in it, which is plant-based. So I'm on a diet, which is no sugar. And so all I can have is plant-based. So this is doesn't mess with your diabetes or I don't have diabetes. It doesn't spike your insulin. Doesn't make you fat. It tastes like Coke, kind of, if you tell yourself it's okay.
Levi, I want to welcome you. That was awesome. Thank you so much for.
I feel like I could have done better at listening to you and not just randomly talking. How I use the room.
No, truly, just an honor. I told him I think we've been in the same room before, but this is the first time actually talking. And just to jump into things, Levi, for the person who doesn't know your story, and there's a whole bunch of your story that I have no clue about even. So if you just want to kind of share even like your folks, kind of where you're born and raised, how you'd end up becoming a pastor, just the whole nine yards.
Sure. They tell me my birthday is May 7th, though I don't remember it, so I can't prove it one way or the other. My parents gave birth to me in Colorado. The doctor who was the OBGYN supervising the birth tried to kill himself the day after I was born. I think he felt really bad. He was complicit in bringing a little monster into the world. So he was involved in a gun-fueled police chase and nearly took his life after a standoff. So that's all a true story. I don't remember any of it, but apparently he was just not pleased he had helped bring me into the world. So my mom always used to tell me that story, and I thought to myself, what is the value of me knowing this, Mom? I'm not sure this is entirely helpful. Yeah, so I grew up in New Mexico. Jenny and I planted the church almost 14 years ago, 13 and a half right now. And then we've been kind of having fun serving Jesus in the Northwest, planting churches, writing books, having babies. Really, just we rotate book, baby, church. And we're done with the babies, so we'll have to churn out a few more books.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
With your churches in this climate. So that's obviously not going to happen.
That is not going to happen. No, your parents, what do they do? What do they do for a living? Maybe they currently do it. Even share that background and was.
Yeah, so my dad has always been in involved in ministry one way or the other. So maybe for a season he'd be a businessman and as a volunteer lay serving, just heavily involved, like almost to a staff role, but even unpaid for a while. He also now is involved in consulting like ministry. So he helps like pastors and churches figure out their media strategy, stuff like that. So he's really savvy with all that. Helped me understand radio, TV, internet, really very progressive thinking. He's my best friend. We talk every day on the phone, though he didn't answer yesterday. I'm not mad. I'm just saying. My mom's an artist and she has an art degree from Michigan State University or Southeastern, goodness, some college in Michigan. And she is responsible for me being loving beauty, art, shape, color. She's just incredible. And we talk a lot on the phone. Her name's Sky. And then, so I've got two brothers, two sisters, big family.
That's fascinating, by the way, with the Jesus end of things. So you grew up in the church, share just even that. When did you kind of come to Christ? When did you get more involved and serious there? And was the pastor kind of the plan from the get-go or kind of fell into it?
Well, my parents named me Levi Aaron, which is the priest and the first priest that ever served. So I didn't have a lot of options opened up for me. It was sort of shoehorned in from the birth certificate there. When I was 2 years old, told my parents I wanted to be a pastor, two, and I've really never wanted to do anything besides that. I've always, for a season when I was kind of rebelling, I used to really kind of see myself going into more corporate design, communication strategy. So ironically enough, the same things that I do now in the church, I would have probably ended up doing outside of the church, you know? So I feel like storytelling, brand, pageantry, like that's my wheelhouse. But, and so I feel like it's been a natural fit to do that within the church.
That's fancy. That's same here on this end. Actually, I didn't have the pastor part. I went to college for business and marketing. always thought I'd do an ad agency of some kind and just do things that were outside the box, just generosity wise and creativity, like just being creative, like just trying different things that way. When did you, what did serving begin to look like when you pursued that? Just like, when did you begin to lead of any kind or speak of any kind? What did that look like for you?
Yeah, I think I got saved like 66 times between, you know, birth and age 12. I must have gotten saved at every altar call there ever was. But I feel like it really took my freshman year in high school. I kind of came to a crisis moment and ultimately really made a decision to follow Jesus enthusiastically. Like, this is a thing, and not just church, but Jesus. And that moment forward, I mean, I really began to want to serve. And I think the serving component was as key to my salvation as the actual gospel message, in that the community of people serving Jesus together collectively, that was transforming, you know, as I gave myself over to it. So I never knew a Christianity without that being, you know, part of it, using my gifts, being around each other, the scraping of iron, sharpening iron in confrontations and hard conversations. So that has been part and parcel of my whole life. I've always served. I did internships, went on mission trips, you know, helped organize, was a junior leader in my youth group, you know, and annoyed every youth pastor I ever had with just I never quit showing up. You know, I would always be there. What do you need? And set up chairs, great. You know, and I think that in the DNA has changed my life.
That's cool. But with the speaking stuff specifically, when was kind of first gig, and how did that look? And even kind of bring us to Fresh Life in that, if you would. Like, just what did it look like ministry wise, like practically?
Yeah, I gave a devo to my youth group leadership team, the interns and the volunteers and the pastor, when I was very young, 14. Did a talk at a mission trip. They asked me to give a message after the play we did to preach the gospel. And I did that. And it seemed like anytime I ever spoke, it was like a fish in water. You know, put me in front of give me written or oral book report, I'll always choose oral. You know, so that was natural. And it began to really be a thing that people would comment on. That was good. You know, I think you know you're on the right track when you stand to lead and turn and people are following. You know, so I think you want to see some traction. Not that you can't ever be an outlier and grow and get better, but I think there should be some outward, hey, that was good, you know, confirmation on that. That was how it was for me. And so I just began to take opportunities as it came. I wasn't like, this is what I'm going to see it be like. I mean, when I was, you know, young, you really didn't know a lot of pastors. I mean, you may have knew, you know, I mean, older people, I guess, doing it, but you didn't have in your head like, oh, I'm going to be a famous pastor. You know what I mean? Like, it was just, I want to be faithful, do what I'm called to do, whatever it is. You know, Charles Spurgeon said that someone said, my church is only 100 people. And he said, hey, 100 people is a lot of people to stand accountable before God for on the day of judgment. So do a good job with those 100, you know? And I guess for me, in youth ministry or in any opportunity I was ever given, large or small, one day I got asked to show up to a Korean church or Chinese church and speak to them on parenting. I was not Chinese. I did not have kids. I was not married. They had asked me to do it. Would you come speak on parenting from the Bible? So I did my best to put a sermon together on parenting. And they asked me to take my shoes off at the church. And, you know, I preached barefoot on parenting. And I don't know what I said or how it went, but I did it. And I preached in retirement homes. And I saw a lot of junior hires sleeping with me preaching sermons too. And so I just think you just have to be faithful and small, and God will give you more opportunities.
That's so true. I think so often, even in myself at times, you'll think that someone just overnight just fell into something. And it's like, man, they've been doing reps and reps and reps and reps and reps that no one's seen, that haven't been on TV, haven't landed on Instagram before even Instagram existed. That person's been working their craft, just being faithful to God and really doing that. And that's been so true. With starting a church, was that something, did you have a church staff position prior to that? To starting a church, kind of share that part.
Yeah, so we wanted to start a church. My wife and I, we were in Orange County, California. I was a teaching pastor at a church of about 2,000 people. And I taught, three out of four Sundays. And the other Sunday, I would, you know, travel and speak other places. Yeah. Kind of great opportunity, and really was a great opportunity. We were content there, but we felt that we were meant to kind of launch out and start something of our own and pioneer it and have it its DNA from the beginning be what God put on us. And so, yeah, we moved to Montana to do it. We didn't want to go across the street and divide the church. And, you know, we just went to them and say, hey, we want to step out. And they were supportive. They actually, you know, gave us like $30,000 to bankroll the first year. And so we're so grateful for that. And then we moved here and had savings and that to go on for a year. We started a Bible study above a bar, invited people around town, literally like Thursday, Friday, we invited. Sunday, we had the first service. 14 people came to the first gathering. And then, you know, it's grown from there. Now we're in, you know, we're in YouTube now. That's what we're doing.
Yeah.
We had a church at one point. Now it's a website. So,
congratulations. No, that's the truth. Last kind of church question. Away from God, the Holy Spirit, what's one thing that you just feel like makes Fresh Life just distinct? Like if there was one thing that you're just like, man, this is what kind of makes us us. And I know that's hard. I would struggle if you asked me about my own church, but is there one that's just like,
yeah,
man, this is just.
I would say one of our values as a church, we have staff values too. But one of the values of our church is that we value the spirit of being a snake bird. And snake bird comes from Jesus' statement about be cunning like a serpent, but harmless like a dove. And we value this ministry ethic or philosophy that is entirely dependent on God for what only he can do, but also scrappy and willing to do whatever we can do. And so I think that nexus has been part of the uniqueness of Fresh Life. You know, as you know, in South Dakota, it's hard ground. It can mean hard ground where there's not a lot of people, you know, not a million people in a city. There's not the big city kind of thinking, you know, so you have to have a different kind of person who's willing to deal with that. The difficulty, the complexity, some of the backwards thinking, the it will never work here, you know, that you bump into. And so I think for us, there's always had to be like a little bit of fight in the DNA. And people that come out tend to go, man, you guys are a scrappy bunch. You know, you're doing a lot with a little. And I feel like our team is always, we wear a lot of hats. We're still very much in startup mode. And I think that's what makes me proud to be a part of this team.
Yeah. And that's definitely seen from afar. And I would say that's something true about our team as well, as the scrappiness of just, hey, we're going to figure this out. And which is, it can be exhausting at times because it's definitely not the 8 to 4 clock done. I mean, it's just kind of crazy and running at it. I can remember when I first saw Fresh Life come out, I could not believe it was in Montana.
Right.
I mean, it just to be just the feel of it even was one step further than the church I pastor, as far as just really doing design well, like just outside the box. And then thinking about Montana, I'm like, for me, that's kind of one more step further than South Dakota. I could be totally wrong. And so I just remember seeing it and like, it just did. I couldn't even almost picture it in my brain of just where this church was coming out of. And yet I was drawn to it because I'm just like, man, they're doing something so different. I sat down with Chris Durso a little while back and the same is true with him, just doing things outside the box. Well, it's one thing to do that in New York City. It's another thing completely to do it out in Montana. And I just thank you for pushing us as churches and pastors and even leaders and Christians. Like, what does it look like? I think there's this thought that to be Christian is to do things subpar and to do things second rate. And I'm always like, I want to do something so beautiful and outside the box that just the person's just, it makes people turn their heads to know more about the God that we're following. I'm just like, man, what is it? Like, they're just different.
Wow. Well, it's a very nice thing to say. Maybe our greatest asset was not knowing what we didn't know. And I think we didn't know that it shouldn't work here. We didn't know that, you know, we didn't take time to ask, you know, why has this not been tried? Why does this not exist? You know, when we started the church here 14 years ago now, I mean, there was no one webcasting, no one podcasting. Most of the websites we would visit around the churches around the area, not in any way denigrating what they were doing with their efforts to reach the city. But the church we started would have felt progressive in Los Angeles or New York, but we chose to start it in an area where it was not just a little bit ahead of, in terms of culture or style, what was happening, but like lightning ahead, you know?
Yeah.
I just talked to a pastor today who thanked me. He's a local pastor here who has added a video site in the last year or two. And he was like, thank you so much for going through the wall first on this. Because when we did it, we didn't take the hits that you took, because everyone knows at least it's a concept that's been proven. You know, we were doing video teaching in Montana 11 years ago. Imagine showing up to a church service where the pastor's not there. It's video because I needed a vacation. And so I would pre-record and then go out of town. And people are like, I remember one was like, wait, there's no pastor? Like, it's like, that's still a concept that some people have a hard time getting around today in major metropolitan areas, much less rural Montana in, you know, 2009. But we just sort of have the forward perspective. If I would have asked people what they wanted, they would have said a faster horse. You know, when they get in the automobile, they're going to feel that it works. And so our thing has been more to say, like, what do we believe God wants us to do? And let's just do it. People, when they experience it, will see what we're talking about.
You're listening to the Converge Podcast Network. And now, a message from a network supporter.
This podcast is sponsored by Denison Ministries, which is a movement creating 7 million culture-changing Christians who are committed to carrying out the truth of the gospel to their sphere of influence through a variety of different ways, which is why Denison Ministries is excited about sponsoring what God is up to on the Conversation podcast. One of the cool ways Denison Ministries helps Christians feel closer to God is through their First 15 devotional. First 15 is designed to help you spend the first 15 minutes of your day experiencing God through scripture, worship, and prayer. You can sign up for First 15 email devotional at first15.org/subscribe or start your day off with First 15 devotional podcast anywhere that you listen.
So the church I pastor started in 2006. So at 14 years old. Yeah. And I again, knowing just how much further, just outside the box Fresh Life is from Embrace, I can't imagine, on top of it, kind of the speaking that you were doing, the conferences, Levi, you're someone that I've prayed for often, just thinking about, I mean, the amount of arrows that have to be shot at you. Hopefully you're at a better place now of not feeling like you're taking it all the time. But I just remember early on thinking, this guy has got to be getting so much thrown at him of just haters. I mean, just pure haters of what you're doing. And I think it's easy to look at what Levi's doing and be like, man, I want that. I want that. I want that. Having no idea of what he actually has. And yeah, I don't know if you felt those arrows a lot early on. Or not?
First of all, thank you for praying for me, and thank you for that. I think we're always going to suffer on the way to greatness. So I think every one of us have to accept a certain amount of whatever I wish my life would look like. There's going to be such new complexity that comes with that, right? I mean, so anybody who wins the lottery is actually going to discover they ruined their life through what they were hoped they would get. So I think, you know, the thing I've been really trying to be content with is where I'm at now is at a place of healthy is better than successful. You know, if success comes at the expense of health. And so I'd rather be faithful and healthy in my relationship with God and my family in that dynamic more so than I'm taking every opportunity. I'm burning the candle at both ends and the middle, you know? So, you know, this interview right now here, we're going to last that I do for the whole month of July. I'm not doing any speaking. I'm not doing any preaching in our church or any other church for the month of July. And I every time I make a decision like that, you pretty much can guarantee the best opportunity will come around. but see, that's the thing. It's like, those are the tests. And I think, I just think you have to make the right yeses early on, your relationship with Jesus, your family, and then you prioritize what you're called to do and then let the rest of it settle where it does.
Gosh, if that's not the truth, just in those moments when you make a hard decision like that, the absolute best options come your way. Levi, I want to transition to talk about your new devotional, Take Back Your Life. How did that come about? What are you hoping comes from it? And even how did it, did you just randomly start writing devotionals on the side? Like, tell us more about that.
No, you know, I realize most people aren't reading, sadly. As an author, it just breaks your heart to think that most people are not going to sit down and read a whole book. So my first and third books did well, but there's a lot of people who are just not going to read a 50,000 page word book. So my editors and I at the publishing company were brainstorming ways to make it easy for people to read the content that would be less intimidating than sitting down and reading a whole book. So we took a lot of the most salient truths from I Declare War and Through the Eyes of a Lion, and we blended them together with entirely new content that's been uncommunicated. And we put it into a package that you could read one day at a time for 40 days. So we added discussion questions, prayers, a breathe, think, and live section every day where you can stop, breathe, reflect, and there's space in the book to write. There's a ribbon so you can keep track of where you were day after day. It's beautiful. An artist did all these little doodles throughout it. It's really cool. I think people will love to see it on their coffee table and go through it every day. And, hey, look, this is going to take me 5 minutes. It's not overwhelming. And I can just really grow my relationship with God and overcome hopefully some, you know, unhelpful habits or tendencies that would maybe be holding you back in the process. So that's the idea. I'm really excited about it because I think it's going to open it up to a lot of people who wouldn't consider themselves a reader, but still are looking to grow in their relationship with God.
That's so good. Yeah. Overall, like for a new Christian, longtime Christian, is there any like specific person that you're like, man, this is who I hope it helps, or kind of anybody?
You know, I think we all have room to grow in emotional intelligence and in self-management. So yes. Book would be, I would say, for anybody who wants to do better at leading themselves. We all lead other teams, maybe, or lead our soccer team or lead a, you know, church, but how are you doing leading you, you know, and how am I doing leading me? And the book is hopefully a chance to expose the blind spots and deal with them. And then there's also a lot of stuff about grief in there too, because I think grief is one of those other areas that really can sneak up on you and hold you back to a greater degree than is helpful. So those two things being married together, you know, victory within self-sabotaging tendencies and overcoming grief and finding power inside your pain. That's kind of the nexus of it all.
No, that is so good. And I'll just say for myself, I don't think I focused enough on emotional health until the last 2 years, and just how important that is and just how critical it is, regardless of what you're leading or what you're doing, just really working on your soul and just who you are, I think is so critically important. Levi, I kind of want to shift just for the end here. I just want to shift with a couple of questions. You're a person, anybody who's listening who doesn't know Levi's story, he's a person who's experienced grief in a way I can't imagine. So go and learn more about that part of things. If you've experienced grief, if you're processing grief, if you're walking through things, would encourage you to do that. But Levi, maybe a part of your story that I don't know, and maybe you haven't had any, away from kind of your personal grief, I look at you as another leader, as someone who's kind of done, hasn't had a misstep. You're almost someone that I'm like, man, I just from my perspective, well, you just haven't had.
Man, it'll be. Yeah.
Well, it just feels like, dude, this guy is just doing it the right way. And I'm sure he hasn't screwed up like I have, like as a leader. Would you be willing?
It's the official story.
Would you be willing to share about like leadership wise, kind of a failure on your part or just kind of your low leadership wise? And I think it can relate as pastors or business sure. people, whatever it might be.
Well, I have, how much time do you have? Because I have a lot of material. I would say that my primary mistake is going to be adding too much value. In that, you know, ideation comes naturally to me. I know where we need to be. My compass is strong. I know what time it is. I don't have a problem with hard work. I want to fix things. I don't take excuses or off ramps. If there's not a way, we'll make a way. If there's not a door, we'll break a hole in the wall. That's my personality. So you can imagine that I don't handle well a dynamic on a team where people are taking shortcuts, cutting corners, or really easily letting going, eh, it didn't work. I tried. Well, did you, I always say, quit trying so hard and get something done. And like, I don't care if you tried. Tell me when you delivered, when you shipped, does it matter that you called five people? I don't care how many people you called. Tell me that it got done. So my problem then becomes not taking the time to develop the grit and emotional dexterity within people to rise up and lead, because in the vacuum of leadership, I will always lead and always offer 10 ideas. So not allowing and giving the space, because the problem is if you lead that way, people will let you and they will come to you like Yoda, you know, look like Luke Skywalker came to Yoda and say, what do I do now, Yoda? And he'll say, well, here's what you do. And then you go do it, as opposed to people coming to you and saying, what do I do? And resisting the urge to say, here's what we do, and saying, instead of saying, what do you think we should do?
Yeah.
And shutting your dang mouth long enough for them to have to struggle through an idea, and then resisting the urge to say it's a terrible idea, but instead saying, well, how would it work with? And but the point is asking more questions than giving answers, and listening long enough for people to actually come up with the answer they have within them. Everybody's genius. Everyone's great. Just needing to be unleashed and leveraged. So my leadership sin I struggle with on a daily basis, and help me, Father, for I have sinned. I need to be forgiven. It's been 3 days since my last confession, that I add too much value instead of helping people to be unleashed as leaders they are.
So the two of us can never work together ever, because everybody will hate us.
We would conquer the world. One of the two.
Has your drivenness, has that led to leadership fails? Like, do you feel like you've burned through people? I'll just confess. I'm a recovering driver-aholic. I don't know if that's even a thing. What does that look like?
What's your Enneagram?
Three. Oh,
yeah, I saw that coming. So I think, yes, I've burned through lots of people and not understood the difference in people's plate size and what they can handle and their aptitude. Not everybody can or should carry the same weight. And I think finding people's sweet spots and releasing them at their core competency, and in knowing that you have to have people running under a load they can't carry. And not everybody is meant to, you know, be a type A, feel no pain type person. And so I think that's important.
Is there something that's helped you develop that part of things, Levi? Just like, did that come through heartache, kind of learning that inside of you?
Marriage. marriage at its key, at its best, you do not despise the weakness of your spouse. You embrace that there's a complexity that comes from it. So it's an asset that my wife's not like me. If she was exactly like me, you know, I wouldn't balance her out. So if you apply to your team what you apply hopefully to your marriage, you then don't resent the weaknesses. You see them as a reverse strength. And so then you build your team out with the kind of robustness that comes from a multitude of gifts, and everyone's doing what they were created to do.
That's so, so good. Last question I have for you. Is there something in your own kind of this personal walk with Christ that you feel like God is teaching you, or something that you're learning either about him, about yourself, or about just kind of the world? Is there anything that's been just kind of like, man, God, I hear you. Yeah. You're telling me this.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be anything profound either. It might just be the simplest thing of this that God's hitting you with.
Beyond the simple beauty of being still and knowing that he's God, you know, and for me, those are the quiet moments in the morning with the birds chirping and hearing the leaves rustling, and those quiet moments and leaning into that. There's great strength in that. And that's, to me, is everything. It's those moments of stillness. Beyond just this, never getting over that, but that's the thing. It's like, yeah, you got to have a quiet time. Yeah, of course. No, it's like, no, but I think when you're not missing the beauty of that, that is incredibly imperative. But then I would say the second thing is my value is not based on my performance. And God does not ever really happy with me or disappointed in me. He's always pleased because he sees Jesus in me. And I think when I know that, then I write a sermon or have an interview or lead a meeting, not to earn anything, you know, because I already have everything I could ever get in Christ. And then I lead out of a place that's healthy instead of performance driven, accolade chasing, conquest validation that comes from, you know, viewing everything as a game and I'm supposed to win.
Oh, that's so good. I think that's something I've been trying to figure out myself of just that. It's so simple, and yet, God, it would change everything about me if I truly in my soul just knew that through and through. And I think it's a day-to-day thing for me of living out of that and then falling out of it and coming back. I'm like, okay, God, I don't want to stand for a minute and over here because I'm miserable. I want you.
It's like Levi, Groundhog's Day.
Yeah, isn't it? And it's just like, sometimes it's the most basic things. I think when we follow Jesus, we're like, we want the deep stuff. And Jesus is like, you haven't figured out the simple basic things. Like, yeah, I just want you to learn this.
My counselor told me, it really helped me. She said, you know, this was in May. She said, you know, the Father said to Jesus, you're my beloved son, before he did a single miracle. And if you can remember that you're his beloved son before you ever did anything great, then, you know, you'll rest out of in that satisfaction. And then out of that, you'll be healthy enough to do all the miracles you're meant to do.
Oh, that's so good. Folks, the devotional is called Take Back Your Life. Go get a copy. If you're not already doing so, go follow Levi. I need to do so myself. I may not be following you. I might just, if you see a bunch of follows for me, it's because I'm doing it right after this.
I'm not Levi. I stopped checking during the racism thing because I was getting unfollowed so many times for speaking out against, you know, racism that I stopped looking. So yeah, unless you follow me on TikTok, because I'm looking at my followers there. That's where I'm building a new base. TikTok audience, I said, I'm here to hide out because Instagram has become mean like Facebook. So I'm just going to hang out on TikTok where everything is silly. That's my goal.
That's good. Go follow Levi. Again, Levi, I just want to thank you so much for spending the time. Thanks for being the real deal and for pushing leaders and pastors and followers of Christ to a place we would have never got without you.
Bro, thank you. And that beard is so strong, by the way. I know we began with Zevia. We'll end with your facial hair. And yeah, so thanks for having me on.
The Conversation with Adam Weber. This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network. You can find more from Adam Weber on Instagram and Twitter and at adamweber.com.
This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network.